Hello, listeners, and welcome to another exciting episode and season of Standing Post. I personally want to say thank you to all the listeners who have continued their journey with me as we learn about the Secret Service in each episode. I also want to say thank you to the Secret Service personnel and leadership for the trust they put in me to put this show together each month. And one final thank you to my behind-the-scenes producer, Star Vasquez. Thank you all very much, and here's to another season of Standing Post. This month, we bring on the show a very special guest. He joined the Secret Service in 1988 after honorably serving in the United States Air Force. He has worked at all levels of the uniform division and held the rank of lieutenant, captain, inspector, and deputy chief of White House operations. His responsibilities include, but not limited to, the coordination of training of new recruits, training of current members in all areas of law enforcement and protection, recruiting efforts, and many other programs. Please welcome to the show, Chief Thomas Sullivan of the Uniform Division. Sir, welcome to the show. I'm happy to have you on here to talk to the listeners about who you are and what you do. I think everybody's going to be really happy to hear you on the show today and what you have to say. So I guess, as always, do you mind telling the listeners who you are and what you do for the Secret Service?
Yes, sir. My name is Tom Sullivan. I am the chief of the Uniform Division Secret Service. I've been in this role for about almost 2.5 years now, and really enjoying it, my day-to-day interactions with the officers and officials from the Secret Service Uniform Division, and trying to move the Uniform Division forward into the future to make it a great place to work and give the officers and officials a great quality of life.
I just want to kind of get your background about who you are, how you've gotten to this position, because I'm going to assume it takes a couple of years to get to the position to where you're at. So I kind of want to start with your beginnings and, you know, who were you growing up, and we'll get to a little bit later about how you joined up with the Secret Service, but kind of who were you before you wore the badge?
Well, you know, I'm from a family from upstate New York in the Syracuse, Utica area, that area up there. My father was a factory worker. My mother was an accountant, so to speak. They used to call it a bookkeeper, but she was basically an accountant. I have a brother and a sister, so there was three of us growing up, had a good middle-class upbringing. Parents were Catholic and grew up Catholic. At about 13 years old, my father got transferred to in the same job, but a different town. So we moved from New York, upstate New York, to Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia, a town called Lansdale, which was a great place to live at the time. Went to junior high and high school there, graduated high school. I did a little wrestling in high school too, wrestling and football, played a little basketball also. It was trying my hand at basically all the sports, baseball, basketball, football. Did like wrestling though. It was good. It was an individual sport.
And I was going to cut in there. How far did you get with your wrestling career there?
I did pretty well in high school. I was second or third in the state of Pennsylvania, which was for the 145-pound class, which was a weight class, which was pretty good. My dad had a saying with my brother and I when we were growing up: you get 18 years with me. And my mom would always say, "Oh, he's just joking, kids. He's just joking." He wasn't joking, right? So his thing was, "Hey, at 18 years old, you gotta, you know, you're going somewhere. You're just not staying with me anymore, right?" So my options were go into college, which is what most of my friends were doing, but I just wasn't mentally there at the time, or go in the military. So I went in the military, enlisted in the Air Force in 1982, actually 1983, right? Right around January 83, and went in the Air Force for 4 years, was a security policeman for a couple years.
Okay.
And then I went into the Honor Guard, which was it's a Bowling Air Force base. That's how I got kind of introduced to the Uniform Division Secret Service. We were on the South grounds doing one of those White House arrival ceremonies. And, you know, you always have a Uniform Division person down at the bus, down in the Ellipse, making sure everybody's who they say they are. And then we got talking for a little bit, and the person said, "Hey, we're doing a test for new officers coming up next weekend. Yeah, you ought to apply, of course." So I call and apply. Went out to Beltsville, took the test, and then did 27 years in the Secret Service Uniform Division, went up through, was officer all the way up to deputy chief when I retired. In 2015, I was a deputy chief of the White House branch for a few years. Really enjoyed that. Enjoyed representing the uniform division to the Secret Service leadership, and enjoyed my time with the officers there and everyone else. My wife's an agent on the job, and well, at the time she was working in DPD, but she came home one day and said, "Hey, I think I want to put in for this position overseas. It's a place called The Hague, Netherlands." Mm. So we looked it up and we thought, well, you know, I have 27 years in, would be a good for the family. So we decided that she would put in for the job, and if she got accepted, I would retire. So she put in and she got accepted. So in March of 2015, I retired. I went overseas for 3 years with my wife and daughter. And I have two older daughters from a first marriage. They would come and visit, and we spent 3 years in Holland. Enjoyed myself over there. And one of the good things about being about retirement is that all the things that happen to you in the Secret Service, and it can be many, you know, the year hours of work that you worked and all the positions that you've held and all the crazy hours of mm-hmm. of everything going on, it kind of sloughs away, and all you remember is the really good stuff from the Secret Service, the friends that you've made and the people that you've touched. Those are the things you remember when you're retired after a little while. And when the position for Uniform Division Chief came open, I reapplied because we were coming back here after 3 years. And I did a couple interviews, about five or six interviews, and they were hired me as a chief. And when I went through that process, all I was telling them was things that I had already learned through my 27-year career here before of things that I thought I wanted to do with the uniform division. So I guess I made an impression, so they hired me as a chief. And I've been here ever since trying to work every day for the officers and the officials in the uniform division to make us a better place to live and work.
Now, is that common? Is the chief's position something that is offered? Is it solely offered within the Secret Service, or are other law enforcement personnel allowed to apply for it?
I believe this is the first time that the chief's position was advertised outside of the Secret Service.
Okay, so you're then the first person that has ever gone through that process before.
That is correct. Usually they hire from within and they promote from within. But this time we had a new director at the time, Director Als, and he thinks he wanted to try to find something from the outside. And I guess I was kind of the middle ground there, right? Specifically still with the service, but I was a person that had a lot of experience with it. So they brought me back.
When you first joined up, kind of switching gears back to the earlier part of your career, what are some key things that you felt like you learned in the uniform division? Were there any key points that you might want to pass on, or things that you'd like to kind of talk about as far as experiences that you had and things you learned from that may benefit those that are looking to maybe one day be the chief of UD?
I would say that with any job, right, you have to have the ability to professionally interpret what you want to do and push it forward in a way that's easy to understand. The uniform division is not a complicated job, but some of the things we deal with, whether it's budget or personnel or, you know, staffing or schedules, those things become difficult because they affect so many different people. And for me, I think when I got to be a captain at the White House branch, I was doing special projects down there, and a lot of that I had to do back then. There wasn't as many people involved in it, but the ability to give people a person a better quality of life was really a good thing for me. I thought, man, I can really make a difference here. If I can get one or two people just to have a better quality of life and to be able to not have to work birthdays and holidays and that kind of thing, to be fair in a way that's seen by everybody, right? So that, because sometimes especially when you're doing small things like training people in the jock or training people for bicycle patrol, that showing everybody that the list that you're going off of is clear and it's there all the time and people see it, the clarity of it, and it's out there so the officers can see it, it makes them believe in you. And it makes them believe that, oh, this is fair. Okay, I get it. I'm going to get that training next time, right? It's not going to be just a list that I put my friend on whenever I want to get a Trek person trained. I'm going to put my buddy there. Mm-hmm. But he can see it. It's out there, and it's honest. And that's what I kind of wanted to do. I wanted to be an honest leader with them and to try to make sure that things went right for the uniform division.
Some of the time or during your experience within, I guess, going through the ranks with the uniform division, I guess I wanted to ask, were you part of any special groups?
I did do about nine and a half years with the emergency response team. That was my group that I, right in the middle of my career, I leaned a 7-year mark, 8-year mark to about, I'm sorry, go back on that. It was about 5 or 6 years until about my 15-year mark. I was in the emergency response team at the time, the tactical team at the White House.
Okay. Yeah, we had Sergeant Technician Darian Knoll on.
Yeah, Darian's a good man, very, very good man, and we're lucky to have him. Some of the things he brings to the table as the young officer, young sergeant, and a lieutenant on that team, he's the perfect person to be leading them into the future. He's driven, athletic, very, very powerful guy, and really, really driven. So ERT has everything I wanted it to have when I was a young officer, right? Young officer and sergeant. We wanted training. They have the training. We wanted equipment. They have the best equipment. So they have the leadership too. The leadership over there in ERT is really, really excellent. SOD, Special Operations Division, their SAC there is fantastic. The deputy chief's great. They're run on all cylinders over there.
So your time in the Secret Service, and again, going through the ranks in your career, did you ever have a mentor or a leader that you looked to?
I had a few leaders throughout my time. One of them was a gentleman that I was in the Air Force with. He was my staff sergeant, and even gotten it up to be a senior enlisted person there in the Air Force. And I would always reach out to him for guidance. Always been in some way up until probably halfway through my career, call and say, "Hey, Sarge, what do you think about this?" And he would always tell me just to keep moving forward. You got all the good basic stuff down, the basic leadership roles, the traits of a good leader. Just keep pushing forward and keep asking questions and don't be silent. So as I went through the UD ranks, that's how I pretty much came out. I tried not to be offensive, but I tried to keep pushing forward and making sure that the uniform division was doing things the right way.
And is that how you kind of live your life now? If there's individuals that come to ask that question, do you take those values and do you kind of apply them to UD as you see it today?
I do. I every day I come into work and I try to push on one or two more things. I have about 15 things on my desk and I try to cross them off. Even, and these are very high level things, right? Mm-hmm. Better work-life balance for the officers. How do you do that? And there's about 7 things underneath that. So I keep trying to push through those things, right? And this is not rocket science stuff, right? But at some point you need to make sure that you're thinking 5 years away so that you can make sure that you're thinking ahead so you can make sure that people are having that quality of life and a good job 5 years out.
Maybe that's a good segue into some of the roles and responsibilities of your position. And so what goes into being a chief of the uniform division for the Secret Service? Are you able to kind of elaborate or to just kind of describe what your day-to-day is and what you have to do kind of year in and year out?
Sure, Cody. As the chief, my overall responsibility is to ensure that officers and officials, with sergeants, lieutenants, captains, inspectors, all those people have what they need to do their job. That's my job, is to identify what they need and to provide it to them, right? So mm-hmm. as we go, every day when I come to work, I'm trying to anticipate what the next need for our employees are and to try to provide that to them. That means working with the ADPO and the DADs here in PO to identify the needs of what happens at the branches. I've worked at all the branches at some point in my career. So I think that I can identify what those needs are pretty quickly and pretty easily. Now, there are plenty of things that happen that you don't have visibility to, right? In the beginning of 2020, would we need CDU gear? I probably would have said, no, most likely not, right? But but looking at what's happened over the last few weeks, yes, we need a CDU gear to give the officers and the officials and the agents that were down there on the scene the correct equipment to work in that those conditions. And they changed so quickly.
And
who would have thought about COVID?
And I just
a year ago.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, sir. I just wanted to. You had talked about PO, and that's Protective Operations.
Yes, OPO, Office of Protective Operations.
Okay, and then
the chief works for the EPO.
Okay, and you were talking about the gear for the uniform division. It was the CDE. Or
CDU.
CDU.
It's CDU, which is a civil disturbance unit gear, which is more like a riot helmet and shields, and there's pads that they wear so that when people throw things at them, they don't get injured.
Got it. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that the listeners knew what those acronyms were.
No, and that's fine. As you try to plan for some of these things to provide things for all of our officers and officials on the branches, sometimes they pop up so quickly that you really have to kind of have a good knowledge of what you've done in the past and what's happening in the future. That's why it's so important to have a good staff. I know the assistant director of PO, Kim Cheadle, has a great staff upstairs, and they're very helpful with special projects staff up there with identifying things we need and quickly being able to buy them if we see fit and approved by the director's office that we get them. So, as you look back and you see things that are coming in the future and what's happened in the past, I think you try to prepare yourself for everything that goes on in the Secret Service.
Who are you looking for to join the uniform division? Is there a particular type of person that you kind of want? So if there's somebody out there that's on the fence of joining the Secret Service, like, who do you want? What can you tell them to kind of convince them to join the best federal law enforcement organization in the United States?
I think for me, the biggest thing is being selfless, right? You don't come in to work in the uniform division or in the Secret Service as a whole because you're just trying to make yourself better, right? You come in because you're trying to do something to make a change and make things better. You're trying to come into the unit, the Secret Service as a whole, because you want to give back to people, right? You want to help people. And if that's the one thing I think you have to have in the uniform division and in the Secret Service as a whole, you have to be selfless, right? You have to give to the whole cause. The director says, mission first, people always. Those people that come in here and do this job because, they can get more money somewhere else. Everybody we hire is very, very, mm-hmm. they're very, very, they can go other places. I mean, they have degrees, they have clearances, they have, intelligence, they have the backgrounds, experience. They can go somewhere else. There's no issue with that. But the best thing about working in the Secret Service, number one, is the people, right? And then the mission. The mission is so important here. You don't get this mission somewhere else. You go to a local police department, you're probably not going to get the same mission that the Secret Service has. Mm-hmm. And the travel is also really important. And the travel that we have with the protectees is actually really, really important. So there's so many different aspects to the Secret Service where just a law enforcement officer somewhere else probably wouldn't get most of the things that you're getting in the Secret Service.
And thank you for sharing that with me. And I know throughout your career, it's a pretty demanding lifestyle to be a part of the Secret Service in general, and especially the uniform division. And I kind of want to ask something personal. Like, what do you do to unwind? What are some hobbies that you may have that kind of get your mind reset before you head back into the next shift?
Most guys, I like to tinker around the house with projects, and my wife is happy to identify quite a few projects for me. I also like to fish. I enjoy fishing. I haven't been doing that much since I've been back as a chief, but I really enjoy the ability to go out and kind of be by yourself on a pond or a lake or a stream and just fish. It's really relaxing to me. I also do a lot of walking.
Okay.
I enjoy walking with my dog and just relaxing that way and trying to clear your head of all the things that have occurred during the day and just try to think about things that are important for the future.
What type of fish do you like? Is there a particular species that you particularly like to fish?
I don't do a lot of fly fishing, although I enjoy fly fishing.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter went to Alaska last summer and we did halibut fishing. That's a deep sea fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did some fly fishing for salmon. That was fantastic.
Okay. Do you
can't do that? You can't do that here in Virginia. Trout and that kind of stuff is what you do here in Virginia.
Okay. And I guess my last question on it: Do you get pretty specific with it? Do you create your make your own flies?
No, I haven't really gotten that deep into it. When I was overseas, I did a lot of in Holland, they have canals.
Okay.
So you did a lot of fishing, not fly fishing, just regular fishing in canals. And so the last few years has been mostly freshwater fishing.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
I think one of the more important things is to be able to find something where you can kind of clear your mind, right? I mean, reading is also a good thing for me. I enjoy reading, and I don't read books for work, right? I just read enjoyable reading, right? Detective novels and that kind of thing, things that I enjoy, you know.
Okay.
To kind of pass your time and to clear your head.
Any challenging situations or anything that happened to your career that you'd like to speak about?
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting facts about being a uniformed division officer is that almost all my career until I became probably about an inspector or deputy chief, the big topic was, you know, the agent versus UD field, right? Mm-hmm. You know, agent being the bosses and UD being kind of like the group that's down a bit. And I think over my career, I've really tried to get rid of that thought process that the uniform division is underneath the agent side. I don't believe that. I think we're equals.
Mm-hmm.
I think the uniform division makes their own path and has their own professionals, just like the agents do. And I really have over my career felt as though if you bring up good topics that you need to do on the agents on the uniform division side, the agent side will listen and will help with those processes. So I think over my career, one of the things I kind of wanted to do, and hopeful that I've been successful at it, is to get rid of that thought process that there's two different groups, agents and uniform division.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's all the same. They work together for one mission. And I don't think that any longer in this day and age, you can have two separate groups. It has to be one group doing their job, right? Our job is facility protection,
mm-hmm.
and the agent's job is personal protection and, of course, investigation of crimes. But for the uniform division, our job is facility protection and access control, those type of things, and policing. And we do the job to the best of our ability. And I believe that the respect that we get from that has been given by the agent side a lot in the last 5 or 7 years. So I think it's becoming much better. And I'm hopeful that I'm really hopeful that people that work for the uniform division don't mm-hmm. see that divide any longer. I don't see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's gotten better over the years.
Now, I was going to ask you if there was any specific projects or programs or policies that you implemented. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with what you just said, but if it did, I mean, that would work too. But has there been any major initiatives that you've created, developed over the past couple of years and implemented for the uniform
division?
Yeah,
I think one of the best things I did was, as a lieutenant, I was in charge of the emergency response team. And at that time, we were looking at less lethal topics, less lethal equipment, those kind of things, to bring the Secret Service emergency response team, uniform division response team, kind of using we had a lot of different weapons at that time to use, but we didn't have anything that was what you call less lethal. So mm-hmm. canine dogs were suggested, and we took care of that project and moved forward. And now ERT has, I think, 18 to 19, 20 tactical dogs that they use. They use them for on the White House grounds. They use them for wherever the president goes, as a way to ensure that dogs can tell if there's someone in the perimeter that's not supposed to be. So they'll find all kinds of different things. And I think that those ERT dogs was one of my specialties, and one of the things that I took to heart, something that happened earlier in my career, and I enjoyed it. You know, I did getting everybody involved and making sure that we had all the different positions filled and what the requirements and everything else, and working with RTC, the Raleigh Training Center, canine side,
mm-hmm.
developing that program and implementing it and getting it moving, finding the dogs, getting the ERT technicians trained to be handlers, and all the things that come with it, right? Like the cars and all those different things. It was really a good project, and it kept us busy for a while, and now it's up and running. And I think it's a great thing for uniformed division officers to have.
Well, sir, I wanted to ask you this, and I apologize for maybe showing your age a little bit here on this. You know, what was the biggest change that you've seen over the time of your career? Something that you kind of fell in on or you trained on when you were just joined the uniform division and to today? Is there been any extreme changes or things that just said to yourself, wow, we've come a long way in the Secret Service in general? Are you able to speak to that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the equipment that you use, right?
Mm-hmm.
Policing has changed and security policing has changed over the years. The Secret Service has been good with trying to adapt with all the different equipment that we have. You look at officers now, we've changed. When I come to work every day, I wear a white shirt and black pants. So I'm wearing a police uniform.
Mm-hmm.
The ceremonial uniform I wear, the white shirt with a tie. I think nowadays most people coming into police work don't see that as a law enforcement uniform any longer. So the Secret Service is trying to be proactive and more modern. So, you know, now the officers wear a black shirt with no tie and a little bit, and they wear their vest on the outside of their uniform instead of underneath like we used to. So we still have a ceremonial uniform for the West Wing and Mansion at the White House, but most officers that down there, they wear a black shirt with outer carrier vest, which is very helpful for them. They can take it off when it's really hot, when they take breaks, that kind of thing. So I think the equipment, if you look at some of the ERT and CS teams that we have, and even the K-9 teams, the amount of equipment they have now where, you know, we didn't have when I was a young officer, it was in the 90s, and you didn't have that kind of equipment. Now you're more modern. You're more able to put things on your vest, you know, less lethal devices like a taser, right? That's on your vest now. New weapon systems for ERT and seek and counter sniper, new scopes, new helmets, new everything. Bikes for bike patrol, buying new motorcycles for the motorcycle unit. Everything under the sun you can think of equipment-wise. Even canine dogs, right? Canine dogs have come along in the last 7 to 10 years. And you're basically buying a canine dog now that pretty much has a master's degree. All you need to do is train the officer to handle the dog, right? The dog already has the skills that it needs when you buy it. Of course, there's more training that comes in when you're doing explosive control, like explosive detection training, but with the odors. But and you're buying these dogs, and they're just fantastic. It's really the equipment that we buy, and the ability to research and develop new things for us to go into the next century with, in the next 5 years with. What's going to be next? What's going to be come up and coming? And I think the service does a pretty good job of identifying new things.
Well, sir, this would be a good opportunity if you'd like to talk about that. Do you have kind of a vision for the uniform division?
I do. I think one of the issues that the uniform division and the service as a whole sometimes takes on is that, you know, we're a very can-do organization. You tell us, hey, this is a new thing, you need to do it, we take it on and we do it to the best of our ability. But the one thing we don't do is we don't wait to get our staffing numbers up to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We take on the additional responsibility and we do it. And then maybe a couple of years later, we try to get up with the numbers of people that are there so we can have that quality of life. And what's happened to the Secret Service, I think, in the uniform division particularly, is that we have too many responsibilities for the number of people we have. So in the last 2 or 3 years, 4 years, the service has done a really good job of hiring more people, right? And my expectation for the uniform division is to be up at around 1,800 to 2,000 people so that when you come on to the uniform division, I don't have to cancel your days off every week. You'll be able to put down roots and have a family here and live here, right? It's difficult. We recruit from all over the country and people come here. Sometimes they come here with a family. Sometimes they come here by themselves, but it's a lot more expensive to live in DC than it is to live, you know, in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
So identifying the number of people that you need, training them, and then retaining them, right, is the most important thing, I think, as the chief's job. Identifying how many people you need, getting that into your budget, and then hiring them and retaining them once you hire them is very, very important. I think it's just the most important thing for the uniform division, because right now, you know, we are much better than we were 3 to 5 years ago, right? We're up around 1,600 people in the uniform division, which is really helping our quality of life, which in turn lessens the amount of people that want to go other places. So that to us is a key factor, making sure that you can retain those people that you work so hard to hire and train. Retention is the most important thing. So if I could do anything to help with that, that's what we're going to do in the uniform division. We're going to do different things to see if we can give people a better quality of life. Can we have them work 5 days on, 5 days off, 7 days on, 7 days off? Can we do different scheduling so that people with children don't have to work crazy 12-hour shifts? Is there a way we can do all those different things and include a good quality of life for these officers? That's what's key. I think most of these officers enjoy the job. They like to travel. They enjoy doing the police work. They enjoy the people they work with. The biggest thing for us is not to, what's the one person say? You ride the horse till it's dead, then you eat it, right?
Yeah.
Trying not to do that on a regular basis. Now, everybody understands during the campaign, everybody understands that year where the campaign is up and running, it's a little different. You know, you're going to be traveling a lot, working a lot of overtime. But when there's no campaign and there's not a lot of travel, you shouldn't be forcing people to work.
Mm-hmm.
So on the uniform division side, we just need to make sure we're doing the right things with scheduling and staffing so that we can continue to improve people's quality of life. And I've said this probably, 50 times on this podcast. The quality of life in the uniform division has gotten better, but it needs to continue to get better, because if it doesn't, we won't keep people. And that's what we want to do. We want to keep the people we hire. We hire really good people. And, I was never prouder of our officers 29th of May when they held the line there on Pennsylvania Avenue during those protests.
Mm-hmm.
That's because we hire really good people, people that want to be here. They love the mission. They like the people. But we have to improve their quality of life so they can stay.
Chief Sullivan, I got a couple more questions here for you before we start wrapping things up. And I just wanted to, I'm going to kind of put the spotlight back onto you for this question. Is there anything that you can think of in your tenured career that you could either wish you did over again, or you just thought to yourself, man, I wish I knew that particular thing or a new way around a challenge that somebody might face coming up through the ranks?
Yeah, there's many times in my career, and I'm sure there's many times in almost everybody's career here in the Secret Service, where they've thought, okay, this job is not for me, right? I got to find something else to do here. I'm at my limit. I'm doing everything I need to do, but my quality of life is just not getting better. I'm doing too much at work, not enough at home. I'm sure there's every person that's been in the Secret Service for a number of years has questioned or thought at some point, all right, I gotta do something different here in my life, in my career, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as I talk to officers and agents and APTs about careers and about things, I think that's normal. Everybody thinks about that in their life, right? But if you could just see past that just for a little bit, and remember the good things about this job. Sometimes over time, the things that all the overtime and the weekends off and the days off canceled and all those kind of things, they just pile up on you, right? If you can just take a step back and remember what's good about this job and what's happening with your family and all those things and the mentorship, right? If I could go back and try to mentor more people at a younger age, I think I would have enjoyed that more than coming back as a chief is great, and I can go and talk to people. But it's like being the director here. I'm sure the director feels the same way. When you go down to the White House or these other branches, people are going to try to tell you what you want to hear, right? They're going to say, mm-hmm. "Oh, chief's here. Yeah, everything's great, sir. Everything's good." And they want you to go on talking to somebody else. But what I would ask is that people give you honest answers to your questions. What are we doing wrong? What are we doing right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need to do your job? And I think for me, mentoring people at a better level for the service is what we need to do in the long run.
Well, Chief, you've said a lot on this podcast already about how you see the culture, how you see the organization, and how you see you know, the personnel that work for you. Is there anything else you'd like to pass on as the chief of the uniform division of the Secret Service?
Yeah, I think one thing that I try to do on a daily basis here is, you know, I sit around meetings, do a lot of talking to the bosses in the Secret Service, director and deputy director, the ADPOs, all the ADs. And sometimes, you know, the discussions that they have at that level, and we have at that level, never really get down to the basic officer or agent working the job. So that communication from up high doesn't really ever kind of translate down to the basic officer or agent. And trying every day to try to make sure I can talk to the officers and supervisors in the uniform division to try to give them what the direction, what the director and deputy director and the ADs up there wanted to. They are good people. They want the best for everybody in the Secret Service. And I think that they're doing a much better job in the last 5 or 7 years than we have in the past, trying to make sure that the employees are the most important thing. If you don't have employees, you can't do this job. And I think the director and the deputy director, the ADPO, and all the ADs up there, including the chief and assistant chief of the uniform division, are doing that on a daily basis, trying to communicate and see, try to do the best thing we can for the Secret Service moving forward. I wish in some way I could give a person the ability to come up and be with us every day, right, so they can see these discussions that we have, mm-hmm. and how involved the deputy and the director and the ADPO and all those people are in the day-to-day workings of the Secret Service.
Well, Chief, the final question I have for you is something you might want to pass on to our listeners.
Just that we're proud of you. I'm proud of you every day. You come into work and you do the best job you can here for the Secret Service Uniform Division, or just for the Secret Service as a whole, whether you're an agent or an APT, an IPO, or you work for TSD or in the Uniform Division. We're all proud of you. You guys do a great job. Our strongest part of the Secret Service is the people we hire. And that's the best thing about the service is the people. And if I can just tell you all that the Secret Service is a great place to work, and you all do a great job. I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you, Chief Sullivan, for coming on the show and for speaking with me.
Oh, no problem, Cody. Thank you very much for taking the time and letting me talk to you for about half an hour here, 45 minutes.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to Standing Post. Please hit the subscribe button if you like what you heard. And if you'd like to know more information about the Secret Service or how to join, please go to www.secretservice.gov. And until next time, listeners, stay vigilant.